Welcome to the Minnesota chapter of the American College of Healthcare Executives podcast. In today's episode, Abraham Dulhoff speaks with Thomas Harris Jr., Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare. The conversation covers mentorship in career development.
Welcome to the podcast. We are here with Thomas Harris Jr. He is a member of the American College of Healthcare Executives, and he is a fellow in the American College of Healthcare Executives. Currently, he serves as Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare. He recently came from Ochsner in New Orleans, where he served as a vice president. Before that, he worked in with the Children's Hospital in LA, Kaiser Medical Center. Looking back at your history, the topic that we're wanting to dive into here, and I can't imagine that we'd have a better guest to give us an idea of the role mentors and mentees can play in an individual's advancement. What is your, in your words, I've got the, I think, proper definition of a mentor here, but what is, in your words, what is a mentor?
So to me, a mentor is an advisor and someone that you look to from a mentee standpoint, someone that you look to for guidance and for counsel and to help you to not only navigate your career, but also to help you make hard decisions, either about your career or about life in general.
So I made the mistake of diving into the rabbit hole of the term mentor. Before we hopped on, I'm going to share just a little bit about this. So it's funny. So the word mentor actually comes from Homer's Odyssey. He was a close friend of Odysseus, I come to find out, who placed his son Telemachus with Mentor, so his close friend, and charged him with protecting him while he was off at the Trojan War, the one with the big horse, and guiding the hero while he was away. So funny thing about it is apparently Mentor was not very good and he was supposed to prepare Telemachus to really step up when his father returned so he could kind of take over things, and he didn't do a very good job. But Athena, the goddess Athena, was like, you know, I can't let this guy fail. So she took the form of Mentor. So she looked like Mentor and was the reason that he was successful. Now, those listeners who are much better versed in all this than I am, that was a summary I found online. So forgive any inaccuracies, but I think it's a decent comparison, because I think we've all had really, really, really great mentors. And then we've had other people who maybe they weren't that great.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in your thoughts. What is the difference between a good and a bad mentor? And what role does a mentee have in ensuring that relationship is valuable?
Yeah. Well, first, I have to say thanks for the histrionics and the lesson on what or how the term mentor came about, because I'd never studied it.
Neither did I.
And so I just learned something. So thanks for that. But to me, a good mentor is someone who, sets aside time to really dedicate to being a mentor, because it is very time consuming. And then two, someone who is a great listener, because part of what you're doing is trying to listen and understand where a person either is in their career or in their life, and trying to give them, you know, wise counsel. And three, someone who can put together a plan of action to help a person actualize their goals. So if you have those three components in a person and in a mentor, then you're doing good.
I've been the beneficiary of good mentors. I've served in mentor status before, but I don't know that I've ever heard it articulated in that way, particularly that last point. You talked about creating an action plan.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting, because the times that I think I may have just taken this for granted with my good mentors is the amount of time they spend thinking about me when I'm not with them.
Yeah, it's not just a professional link, it's a personal link. And so just as you pointed out, if you are a good mentor, in which I've been a mentor and a mentee, you do spend time outside of talking to that individual face-to-face to kind of think through some of the either problems that they've brought to you or situations that they've brought to you, or just thinking about them in general of what do you think is the, you know, the next step or course of action that will benefit this individual. And so you spend some time pulling all of those thoughts together, and in your mind, or at least in my mind, I'm always crafting, you know, kind of an action plan on things that I think the person needs to do in order to actualize their goal or, you know, get to the next step in their career. And so that's what I mean by putting together that action plan and spending some time on thinking through that, and even, you know, crafting it in written form.
Mm-hmm. It's not something that just kind of happens though, right?
No.
I mean, it sounds like, I mean, but do you think that's too much to ask someone? I mean, let's take you as an example.
I don't think of it as a burden, because it's up to me to say yes or no. And so I only say yes in the instances where I feel that I have the time to do it and that I am the right mentor for that individual. There have been several people that I've told no who have asked me to mentor them. And I've tried to at least steer them in the right direction of maybe this person, someone else, is a good mentor for you, but either I'm not the right person or I really don't have the bandwidth or time right now because I'm mentoring two or three other people. And so going back to your question, I don't ever see it as a burden because I have the option of saying, no, I'm not going
to. Sure.
Yeah.
So what about the times when they are already your mentor? How does that change the calculus of it for you?
So, you know, for my mentors or mentees, I always try to craft out, you know, set aside time to touch bases with them and to talk to them. And if they approach me with a situation and it's just not the right time to talk, I will tell them, hey, you know, can I get back with you either tomorrow or the next day, or can we schedule some time next week when I have more availability on my calendar and I have more brain space to dedicate to our conversation? And so, again, I don't see it as a burden. I may not have the time in the moment to actually get to it if they have a pressing issue, but I try to make the time as soon as I possibly can
sure.
in order to, you know, address their issues.
Can you talk about a couple of the, maybe your first mentor, maybe not your first mentor, but just give us an example of where you were in your career, mm-hmm. Where this mentor, whichever one you want to pick, was in their career. And then tell us what that relationship looked like.
Sure. My very first mentor was actually the medical group administrator for the Los Angeles Medical Center of Kaiser Permanente. And she also happened to be my boss. And so, you know, there are times, and I'm just going to put, there are times when your mentor is your boss, and there are times when your mentor is someone else that is not, may not even be associated with your professional career. But it just so happened that she was my mentor as well, because she was one of the first professional healthcare executive that I worked for. And two, we just took a liking to each other. And so I was in awe of her. I thought that she was very smart. And when I looked at her career, and she started at the organization as a nurse and worked her way up to being a medical center or medical group administrator, which was basically the CEO of the medical practice for that particular medical center. I just felt that she had all of the tenets that I was looking for to become or be a good mentor. And so that relationship was great because she actually helped me to maneuver my career probably the first 5 years that I was at Kaiser Permanente. And the first two positions that I had outside of the fellowship, because I started at Kaiser Permanente as an administrative fellow, those first two positions that I actually got within the organization was because she tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I think that you will be good for this position. Are you ready to take the next step in your career? And so had she not done that, I probably would not have vied for at least one of those positions, which ended up being a very pivotal position within my career.
What did those interactions look like? Was it super regimented. You met with each other every month, day in, you know, there was not a month you missed, or was it maybe a hybrid where it was, you had your time where you met with her, but it was the offline conversations that were also there. What did that actual relationship look like?
Yeah. So it was a hybrid. So we had some very structured meetings where we went through a plan of action and was very tactical. And there were other meetings that were very informal over, you know, coffee or over lunch. And those were the conversations where she got very personal about what I was doing and how I was acclimating, because, you know, this was during the time that I had relocated to Los Angeles. And so I'm originally from Louisiana. And so part of her mentoring me was making sure that I was comfortable in the environment and that I was acclimating to the environment and that I had the resources that I need and felt comfortable living in a new state and in a new city. She was very purposeful about asking me if I was meeting new people and meeting friends and what my life was like outside of work, because she understood that in order to be a well-rounded healthcare executive and to actually be successful in my role, that I not only needed to focus on work and what was happening there, but I also needed to have a rich life outside of work in order to, you know, be happy and to have a retreat away from work and to re-energize myself when I was not at work. And so I appreciated that.
Yeah. So did that relationship have an expiration date? You left Kaiser and then you no longer talked to her, or was it, is it now evolved into a friendship, or what did that look like?
So it has evolved into a friendship. I will say I talk to her as often as I did during that time in my earlier career, because she has, she retired from Kaiser Permanente and moved on with her life. And I've had, oh my God, several jobs since then and have worked for three different organizations. And so no, I don't keep in contact with her as often, but occasionally I will, you know, talk to her or reach out to her. And we still, you know, it may not even be annually, maybe by, and we will find some time to connect and just to say hello.
Yeah. And maybe the reason I was asking that question is, I imagine that there are people who feel, I don't know, maybe that they're slacking or they feel like they're missing, you know, something. There's a, and I can't remember where it was. Maybe it was one of those silly emails that, you know, forward to 10 people, you know, or you're going to have bad luck for 10 years or something like that. But there was something that stands out in my mind. It talked about relationships being for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And I imagine it's the same. I mean, I have mentors that I had formal mentorship and it was 6 months. And at the end of the 6 months, they're like, it's great meeting you. Enjoy your life. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It was that season. That was the intention of the relationship. We knew it. And, or it was a natural kind of, well, I'm in a position now where you're a great friend, but this mentor-mentee relationship just isn't what it needs to be. And so we, you know, you part ways, but then there are those that last a lifetime. And I just want to caveat that, you know, we're going to explore some of this, I'm sure, between both of our lives here, but there's nothing wrong with any of those three things.
Not at all. And you nailed it. And I couldn't have said it better. There are mentors that will be for a season in your career, and you will, they will act in that capacity for a period of time, and then they will step out of your life and you may never connect with them or talk to them ever again. But then there are some that will last a lifetime. There are some mentors that I once had that have now become friends, and I don't really utilize them in the mentoring capacity anymore. I talk to them as if they're a friend, because some of them have now become my colleagues as I've risen in my career. But then there are mentors, and you know, one of my mentors that I have now, he has been in my life for greater than 10 or 15 years now. And that is a person who I would see that will be long-term. And as a matter of fact, I just flew to Los Angeles over the weekend because he was having a get together at his house. And I promised him back in March when I saw him at ACAG that I would be there. And so I wanted to see him and I wanted to spend time with him.
So you mentioned a couple of things that I think might be worth diving into a little bit here too. So as a mentee, what was it that you were looking for? Or what do you look now for other than or now?
For a good mentor, the person has to want to do it. I think there has to be a want and a passion there for mentoring. And I think a good way of finding a mentor or seeing whether or not they're going to be a good mentor is potentially talking to other people that that mentor has mentored. And that's a good way of understanding kind of before you actually start the process with them, with that mentor, what that mentor style is, and what that mentee's experience was with that mentor. Because there's no greater way to really find out what that relationship will potentially look like than to get feedback from someone who has actually gone through the process.
Sure.
The second thing is I always look for people who have had a career that I want to emulate. So two of my mentors now, one is currently a sitting CEO of an organization. And the gentleman that I was talking about previously used to be a CEO. And then the third thing is I always look for someone that I can feel comfortable with, someone that I can identify with and trust that they're going to give you constructive feedback, which is the most beneficial type of feedback. I mean, you don't want someone that's always going to prop you up and tell you, oh, you've done a wonderful job. Someone who's going to be authentic and someone who's going to be vulnerable. And so those are the things that I look for.
If I don't feel like I can trust my mentor with those stories that are sensitive, then there's really not going to be a whole lot of value out of that relationship. But there has to be that level of candor, right? Do you have any experiences like that?
Yeah, there has to be that level of candor. I agree with you. And actually, one of my current mentors, I had decided, this was probably, I don't know, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, that I was going to leave one organization and transition to another organization. And so I spoke with him about it. I told him all about the opportunity. And he very candidly told me, Thomas, that's not a smart idea. And this is the reason why. He had some history on the organization and the leadership of that organization. And he just didn't felt that that was the right leadership team nor the right organization for me because he knew more about the players and about the organization than I did.
What do you think that relationship or that interaction looks like when I say, Thomas, here's my issues. Are you willing to be my mentor? Does it have to be a formal conversation or is that something that develops over time or maybe both? What do you think in your experience?
So I think it's both. I do like to start a little more informal just to understand what the person is looking for and talk about your likes, your dislikes, what you're looking for, what your career trajectory is, just some fact finding and then get to know each other as a person. And the reason why I like to do that upfront is because that's where you get within yourself whether or not you have connected with this person. And if this is someone that you can see being a mentee, as well as for the mentee, you can see if this person's personality meshes well with you and that they will be a good mentor for you. And then I like to go to the more, I would say, formal, because I'm a big believer in crafting a plan and working that structured plan so you get the end result that you need. And not that everything has to be formal, because some of those meetings after that will be formal and informal. But the formal part that I'm talking about, I used to use this book and I still use it. It's called FYI. And it's a book by Corn Ferry. And it really goes with a leadership development structure and core competencies that every leader should have. Though that book ties together with that, what we call the placemat, with all of those core competencies on it. And so that's where I like to understand through a self-assessment what the mentee's strengths and weaknesses are. What are the and what are the areas that they want to develop? And then using that guide and that book to really kind of guide them along on how they're going to improve in each one of those competencies that they're lacking in, so that ultimately we can get them to the place where they feel more confident, more comfortable in their current position, as well as developing skills to get them to the next level that they want to, you know, ascertain to or get to.
Let's talk about your role as a mentor. Let's look at your mentees. Same kind of situation when you were a mentee. What kinds of things did you look for in mentees? How did you say, yes, this is a good fit, no, this isn't a good fit? And how did they come about finding you?
Yeah. So the first thing that I look for in a mentee is what we call, or what I call, fire in the belly. I want to see someone who really has a hunger to progress in their career and are very self-motivated, because that tells me that that person is going to do the work that we decide needs to be done in order to either solve their issue or progress to the next level or do whatever it takes to get to the place where they want to be in their career. They're going to do the work in order to do that. And so they're going to put energy and effort into the mentor-mentee relationship. And that makes me want to put more of that effort into it as well.
What is the why when you say yes? Why is being a mentor valuable for you?
Because I'm altruistic. You know, I want to and get gratification from helping others and seeing others progress. And so I know that in my life, I've had some great mentors that have poured into me. And so not only am I altruistic and I love to see people progress, but it's also my way of giving back.
That's so good. I mean, I think about, there's enough people saying no in this world. There's enough people who want to step on you to get ahead. That we need people like that who are willing to say yes, who are willing to, you know, take a little bit of time out. And for me, it sounds like it's the same for you. Those are the things we talk about in my work now with my teams, is getting home with your cup full.
Yeah.
Don't be drained. And if you're drained, if you go home and you just feel like, oh, I don't want to go back to work tomorrow, and you come in the next day and you're so excited about it because maybe you're mentoring somebody today, maybe you're just working on a project that just gives you energy, that's what's so important. And that sounds like that's one of the reasons you say yes.
Yeah, it is definitely one of the reasons I say yes. And, you know, it's funny that we're talking about that and you use the term, you know, filling your cup. This is one of the books that I've had previous teams to read, as well as some of my mentors to read. And for those of you that can't, I'm showing Abraham the book, but it's called How Full Is Your Bucket? And to me, as a leader, and then also as a mentor, this is part of our responsibility. Part of that responsibility is to fill someone's bucket or fill someone's cup. And again, filling someone's bucket or cup doesn't necessarily mean that you're just pouring a bunch of, you know, accolades and praises on them, but it's giving them that constructive feedback, providing them with your wisdom and providing them with knowledge that fills their bucket and their cup. And so that is what helps them to progress in their career. That is what helps them to solve some of the issues that they may come to a mentor for.
And that's so unique from person to person, right? I mean, you might have two mentees and they're going in completely different directions.
Yeah.
And one person wants your job and one person wants to maybe sidestep and do something else. It's not going to be a one size fits all.
No, it's not. And it's just like working on several different projects. You know, as healthcare leaders, we know that we work on several different projects at one point in time, and all of them have different strategies. And so for mentees, yes, they will have different strategies, because 9 times out of 10, you know, you may have someone that wants to be CEO, but someone else who wants to be a CFO, or someone else who wants to be the head of marketing, or someone else who, you know, wants to head up a health plan.
What I'd like, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here. I had a college professor in undergrad. People hated him. I ended up really liking him. So maybe that says more about me than it does about him. But he always said something. It was a public speaking class. But he always said something along the lines of, if you had 5 minutes, and maybe we'll say a minute, but if you had 5 minutes where the world was listening, what would you say?
My word of advice would be, don't let fear hold you back. There is nothing to fear but fear itself. And how that plays into this conversation is, for a mentee, don't be scared or afraid to approach someone who you feel that you want to meet, or you may potentially want to be your mentor, or someone that you may just want to have a cup of coffee with and have a one-time conversation with, because you never know where that's going to lead. You know, there are a lot of people who have gotten to know me and have subsequently said, oh, when I first met you, I was scared to approach you because I'm only a fellow and you are a COO, or I'm only a supervisor and you are a vice president. Titles don't matter. When you see someone that you feel that you want to meet, that you want to talk to, that you feel that you can learn something from, don't be afraid to approach them. The worst that they could do is say, no, I don't want to talk to you, or I don't have the time to talk to you. And then you take that, okay, and you move on. But don't be afraid. Don't let fear hold you back, because if you do, then you're limiting your options and your potential.
This was a fantastic conversation. I really, really appreciate the time that you took to sit down and chat with me. For those of you who are listening, you really are. We're so fortunate to be able to get a Cliff Notes version of this conversation between Thomas and I. This has been immensely valuable. I'm certain those who are listening have, you know, maybe taken notes. I can't imagine a better way to kick off the podcast than with this. Thank you so much, Thomas.
Well, thank you, Abraham, for inviting me to be interviewed. And this has been a pleasure. And it's been a great experience for me to actually participate. This is the second podcast that I've ever done. And so I learned a lot from you as well as how to, you know, prep for and get through a podcast. So thank you